So there's this radical difference between the gift and the giver of the gift. Between creation and the creator. Genesis, in which we hear of creation, was radical in many ways. And people will hear Genesis and say, well, back in ancient Mesopotamia, there were hundreds of creation accounts. There's all these different creation accounts. What makes Genesis radically different is that there's this radical difference between the creator and creation. That God, who was alone, nothing else other than God and the Trinitarian persons, out of nothing, ex nihilo, creates everything. All the other creation accounts, there's already creation and God takes and forms it and shapes it, comes from it, all this stuff. It's only in Genesis in which God the Creator spoke and from nothing came everything. And so there's this radical, radical difference between the giver and the gift, between the creator and creation. And where sin, because that sounds stupid simple, right? Yeah, we need to get the difference between that. Creator, creation, gift, gift. It sounds stupid simple. But we mix it up all the time. This is the structure. It's the origin, the source, and the structure of sin is the mixing of that up. In which choose any sin, pride, taking a gift, my own life, and placing it and loving that above the one who gave the gift, God. Lust, avarice, sloth, choose any of them. It's all different forms of this. But what the structure of grace is, the way in which God's life, that's what grace is, it's the life of God. The way that that flows within a person is when everything is properly ordered. The love of God and the love of everything else in its proper order. It's like a body. If it's out of alignment, everything is going to be thrown into chaos. But when it's aligned, everything is able to work as it should. If you notice, if you read in Genesis, after the fall, there's this move from the garden to all of a sudden you see the appearance of cities. Cities are meant to represent something. That with sin, these cities come. It's not saying cities and all cities, people in cities are evil. That's a whole different thing. This is seeing what cities represent biblically, what they're a symbol of. That cities represent this sense in which humanity creates this whole space of their own. And it makes it much easier to become, to believe the lie that they are the givers of life, that they are the ones who created this, that they are the creators. There's this beautiful lyric from a song about 12 years ago. It says, "This city breeds the plague of loving things more than their creator." The disordering of that is a source of all sin, but having it properly ordered, that's the structure of grace in which God's life is able to flow in his creation, primarily through us. And so you have the giver and the gift. Both of these are good. That's important. God created, and what did he say? What did he say after everything he created? And he saw that it was good. He saw that it was good. He saw that it was good. The human person, very good. Creation, the gifts of God, all good. All to be loved, but they're to be loved in their proper order. That we love them, but we don't love them the same. To love God, the source of all good and of all life and of all gifts. And then everything in its order. And so you have Jesus in the gospel today saying, anyone who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Jesus is saying something profound about who he is. I mean, listen to that. Either this dude is an egomaniac, complete narcissist. You have to love me above all those other things. Or he's saying, I am God. The only way he can say that is if he is God. He himself is God. And that all of the gifts come from that. And so you take the different gifts. Take the gift of family, which he's pointing to here. One of the most beautiful things I set my eyes on a couple times is seeing my own brothers the first time that they held their little newborn child. And I have friends who they talk about the moment in which they hold their little newborn. I have a buddy who said his first child, his little girl, when he was holding her for the first time, just right soon after she was born, he said, I never knew it was possible to have a love in my heart that was at the same time as tender and as fierce as it was holding his little girl. And he also said, I never knew I could be so scared to death. He said, I was afraid I was going to screw up, which is a really healthy fear to have. Right? For a parent, they receive this child who is a gift from God. And knowing that God has entrusted this child into their hands with the one ultimate goal of getting them to heaven. And his fear in his heart, I'm going to screw this up. That's a really healthy fear, because it's him recognizing, I can't do this on my own. That if he isn't loving Jesus and learning from Jesus how to love, learning from Jesus how to sacrifice, and trusting from Jesus that all of that brings life, even when you can't see it in the moment, he wouldn't be able to do it. And it's not just the example of Jesus, it's what he receives from Christ, which is the strength to do it. Not just like some emotional, yeah, I'm inspired. No, the actual strength, which is grace, which is the life of God that he receives in prayer and in the sacraments, where we are given this IV of God's life into us. Every wedding I have, I pretty much give the same homily now. It's different because, you know, each couple is different and stuff like that, but the whole core of the message is pretty much the same. I tell this couple I have really horrible news for them, and I do because it's true, that as much as they love one another and as tangible and as real as that love that they're experiencing and that they feel for one another is, it is not enough to live the vows that they're about ready to take on their own strength. I tell them, you do not have the strength to live what you are promising in this sacrament. You don't. As much as he desires to, this husband can't lay his life down selflessly for his wife every single day. He doesn't have the strength on his own, and she doesn't have the strength to receive that love and to offer it back and lay her own life down. As husband and wife, they don't have it. But the good news is that in the sacrament of marriage, which a sacrament is the accessing that life of God, they have, and Jesus gives them through his life, through himself, more than enough strength to live that sacrament through him. The gift of family. the gift of freedom. I love the 4th of July. I love it. I love everything about it. The barbecues, the fireworks, the patriotism rising in people's hearts, those big shirts people wear where you have the eagle, which has the flag in its claws and it's flying. It's just, I love it. But freedom, freedom is a gift. This incredible freedom that we have in the concrete place of the United States of America, freedom is a gift. It is not an end in itself. And that's really important to remember. That freedom is given to us for something. It's given to us for a purpose. Why did God choose to give us freedom? He could have avoided a lot of headache if he had chosen not to. All the moral evil in the world, not a chance. It wouldn't be there. But why did he give us the gift of freedom? It was for something. In a word, love. He gave us the gift of freedom for love. Because that's not possible without freedom. Either in the relationship with him, or to have those rightly ordered relationships with family, with our loved ones, with our enemies. And this gift of freedom is one in which to have that, in which even the gift of our life becomes something. Jesus says in the gospel, whoever finds his life will lose it. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. That's a funny verse. Whoever finds his life will lose it. You want one of the stupidest lines ever written? It was about 31 years ago. It was written down. And it said that at the heart of liberty is the right to define the meaning of existence, that every person has to define the meaning of existence, of the universe, of their life. This lie that Jesus puts his finger on is believing that I'm the one who has to find meaning in my life. I'm the one who has to define the meaning of my own existence and give meaning to my life. I define that. And look around the world where you see that. Look where you see that. Because the lie of this is, of course, disordering it. That the truth, the beautiful truth and the grace of your life is, yes, your life is a gift, but also the meaning and the purpose of your life is also a gift that you don't define and create on your own. It can only be received from God. You receive even the meaning of your life from God, the purpose of your life from God. That you can't just create it on your own or make it what you want it to be. Because it disorders the whole, everything of being, of creation, of the Creator. How does one do that, though? Because that becomes really tempting to do. And I want to give you something super concrete. Prayer. When you pray, is the majority of your prayer coming before God and asking him for gifts? Which, that's good. I don't want to belittle that. That's good. God, I need this right now in my life. God, could you please give this to this member of my family? God, we need rain. Okay? That's good. But there's something, and this is usually at our need, and what's God primarily wanting to give us is something different than just the gifts that he has. Do you come to God asking mainly for his gifts, or asking for himself. Jesus, I need you. I need more of you, Jesus. I need more of your grace in my life. You see that those are two, in some ways, radically different things. But in the one, we're not just seeking, Jesus, you need to give me this thing. You need to give me this thing. Okay. Deeper. Jesus, I need you. And if I have you, and if you are alive in my life, everything else will be given unto me. You will order everything else as it needs to be. It's you that I need, Jesus. It's you I need. This is at the heart of so many of the traditions of the church's prayer. And they flow from the one exception between the radical difference of the giver and the gift, right? That they're radically different, with one huge exception. And that's Jesus, who himself is the giver. He is God, and he gives us himself. The giver has become the gift. Creator has become creation, and he gives us himself in the Eucharist. So that we, the one bit of creation which is very good, can now, like God, share in being a giver. If we're continually in this stance of receiving everything as a gift, everything is a grace from God, and I'm receiving that, I'm able to share in this great dignity in the image of God of now being able to give of my freedom, to give of my life in the model and in the life of Jesus Christ. Do you see how that works? Jesus himself, the Eucharist, the giver and the gift, they have come together so that we might be drawn, the gift, creation, into sharing in this life with God. Of both being ourselves a gift and learning in Jesus Christ what it means to be the giver. That all grace might flow through Christ, through us, into creation.